Okay, my name is Rolf Larson, and today I am giving a talk on the photograph, our modern storyteller. Maybe another title for this show would be Relating Photography to Our Religious Experience. Okay, I guess the beginning of this topic started for me, when I was about 15 years old. I was helping my parents to collect some of the items of my great uncle John, who was a Lutheran pastor in Wisconsin when he died, or after he died. And I had always seen him as an old man. He was quick to smile, but he was always old. And I saw his wife, Vernie, who had died a couple of years before him, as also just another old person. To me, you know, 14, 15 years old, 30 seemed old. I'd seem old to me then. But one thing I ran across, I just sort of looked through a couple of things. You know, you have a couple of free minutes and your hands start moving. And I started looking through an old photo album. And I was really surprised when I looked in it and I saw pictures of the two of them when they were much younger, I suppose in their early 20s. He was just young and out of the seminary, and he had started a parish up in Alberta. And that's where he met Vernie, who he married. And the one picture, I do not remember any other pictures from that album, but there's one picture of Vernie with a couple of friends. Head is tilted back, and there is a laugh coming out of her that could only come out of somebody that was young and very much alive. I remember that. You know, and her eyes are just sparkling and looking straight into the camera. Just that youthful confidence. And it just shocked me because I could recognize her. But at the same time, she was not the person that I had always assumed she was. I mean, there was a sense of a story in a whole world about these two people who were part of my family was opened up. And that is a real important thing about photography that we usually overlook. When we think about photography, what do you think? You think about National Geographic. You think about a photography magazine. You think about a camera, a piece of equipment. But really what photography is all about are those pictures that we take, whether we have $1,000 outfits or whether we have $5 Instamatics. What they are documents of our lives. What they are episodes, they're little images that tell something about us and our story. And it's something that's very personal, and I think I'll be relating in a personal way throughout the show. I'll certainly be saying something about myself, because at the end of the show I have a multimedia presentation that lasts about 12 minutes. It varies because it depends on my mood. I change it a little bit because I run it just as it is. But those old pictures or new pictures that you're taking here today or yesterday or tomorrow, are very, you know, something that's very personal, and they say something about you. And what I'm going to try to get at in this session are some of the ways that you can focus those pictures to perhaps make the statements you make with your photography a little bit better. You know, and it'll both help you to remember your experience here better. Hopefully some of it will wash off over into future pictures that you take. But you know, the main thing is it gives you a tool, a way in which you can better look at what you are doing, not only when you're doing it, but afterwards, later on. Okay, one thing I should really define here is how I'm looking at Christianity, because after all, remember I'm talking about relating photography to our religious experience. Okay. Christianity is the action of living beliefs within a particular community. Community can be a family, can be a church, can be a city, country. Depends on which area you want to look at. And I want to keep the definition really general for the simple reason that it is in the subtle differences between us that unique gifts really come out. We are close enough so that we can understand each other. We are far enough apart so that we have something different to say. And in photography, we have a way of saying something that's inside our head. We might not even know what it is, but we have a way of saying it for ourselves. Okay, now there are many types of stories. I've talked about this a little bit so far. You know, the episode, like that picture of my aunt or my great aunt, their head cocked back and just this life-filled laugh coming out of her, you know, out of her mouth. It was just a second. It was just a split second on that film. But it changed a whole perspective within my life. Okay, and then you've got a context within the particular period of the development of that picture. Okay, she was young, living on the prairie in Alberta, and she was a nurse within a larger community. There's a placement in that community. Okay, so you know, stories go from the specific to more or less the particular to the general, and I'll be getting back to this. Okay, and also it's important, I think, to look at the way that we look at the lives that we live. We have certain ideals that we look at, like we have our heroes. They're people whose lives are centered. There's a driving force within them. This is never true. I mean, everybody, no matter how great or how insignificant, lives in a matter of cycles. You know, there are times when there's growth and effort and direction. There are times when there is nothing. We all just sort of go through these cycles, more of a zigzag pattern. And there are people, unfortunately, and maybe all of us fit into this pattern at different points in our lives, where we just sort of pointlessly meander. We don't really go anywhere in particular. But we've got a lot of, there are a lot of reasons. Personal reasons, there are times when we've got energy, times we don't have energy, and so on. But also, just the modern life that we live has a lot to say about it. When we're here, it's a slower pace. We have a chance to go to sessions and listen, and afterwards, go to, dinner, and then, if you want, or you can go a little later. We can structure our time so that we have time to think, time to just relax, to let some things come into focus. There are generally, as soon as we all leave here and we head back, it's a small town or a large city, what we're basically going to be going into is something which we might call the rat race. We're going to have a schedule. We're working. We have certain responsibilities, certain things, a routine every day. Very much the same. We just keep on moving. It's going along. And, what it does, it has a tendency to deaden us. It has a tendency to put us in a mindset where we just sort of lose track of who we are and where we are. And there's another sacred cow that I always like to attack, the media. You look at the 6 o'clock news, with the media, you're flooded so much with quote-unquote great events. There's a sense of a soap opera every night. If there is no news, they try to create some news. Notice how El Salvador just sort of disappeared. Did it? Really? No. Something else took its place. It's still there. There's still people fighting. There's still people dying. There's still people with hope. There's still the political structure there that's struggling one way or the other. But we don't hear about it anymore because the media likes to talk about something else. But the point is that we're so flooded with great public events that it really attacks our sense of importance. You get the feeling that what you are is really nothing really significant. Gee, what life is really about is not where I am. I'm just living a boring life. I don't know how many of you have ever been in a position where you're in the spotlight of what the news covers, but it's pretty doggone hot. And the thing is, if we lived in what the media was talking about, we would very quickly burn out. In other words, our expectations have been set so high that we really, again, lose contact with ourselves. And the third thing is advertising. Everything that you see in an ad you to buy something. And basically what advertisement comes down to is imitation. Everyone should be like everyone else. This is the best, everybody should use it. Whether it's a pair of jeans, which I see quite a few pairs of around here. I don't think they're designer, I think they're just old Levi's, but that's still a good name. Or whether it's a type of cologne we use. I mean, everything within our society is so marketed that we become like everyone else and we lose who we are. All of these things are fighting against us from becoming who we can be to, in a sense, what we should be. In other words, the models for our life, the directions for our life, are something that come from without us. Advertisers try to tell it, it's in things. The news media tries to tell us that it's in events. And our jobs try to tell us it's in certain values, like how we look at our job, how we perform a certain function, a certain role within our society. And that's one nice thing about a place like Holden, because this is really sort of a unique spot. It's what we loosely call a retreat center, a place where we can go away. Notice the word retreat. What do you think of retreat? You know, somebody losing, moving away, backing up. But in a sense, retreat is really the opposite. It's a place where you go and restore energy, to build up faith, to build up sensitivity, to build up what we as people want to be and want to do. Okay, in fact, we in our society, we rather come to places like Holden Village here, like sick animals seeking curing herbs. It's really almost an instinctual response. Look at the obsession with leisure in our society. We are all looking for a dream. We are all looking for ideals. Advertising media tells us it's this, it's that, buy this, buy that, buy that. They try to steer you into something which will allow you to spend money so that other people can earn money. Of course, no, it's good, creates jobs, etc., etc. But at the same time, it really has a tendency to be much more negative, I think, than positive. Okay, and there's one thing I think that's built into every one of us. It's, I think, a God-given instinct or gift, which is the fact that when something is right, it feels right. You know how when you do something, sometimes you don't quite feel right about it, other times you just feel perfectly right about it? And usually when the feelings just sort of are edging one way or the other, later on you find out that there was something to it. And, okay. We have many ways of instinctually going for something which feels right. The main way is through the arts. And this would be through symbolism. One great example here at Holden Village would be the music. The bell choir that was rehearsing here before I came gave the organist playing a prelude. People performing, singing. The sense of music within our worship service. This is a way of expressing something beyond what words, what our intellect can talk about, can understand. You know, music, in effect, really starts with a spoken word, and ability to intellectualize leaves off. There are many other ways. You've got sculpture, you've got painting. In terms of words, you've got poetry, where individual words mean so much more than their definition, and are usually impossible to understand as a result. Unless we're really well trained. You've got crafts. You look at all the people doing creative things around here. For me, it's photography. Finally, I get to photography. Okay, and it all comes down to finding expression beyond words. Okay, and photography, really, you can look at it as a tool. You can also look at it as a record, as I told you before, a way of expressing something, as a legacy, as a way of capturing something which might no longer be there, but still is a part of something or someone which meant a lot. photography has a way of summarizing life. You know, and basically does this through taking the five senses, sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste, and putting them on a little square, whether it's a slide or a print. You're taking three dimensions, putting them into two dimensions. And you're taking all of these different elements, and you're just putting them right there, static. You're taking a section out of time, and you're enclosing it. Okay, and I think if this is done properly, it sort of creates a sixth sense, as I like to think of it, a sense of capturing the mood or meaning, a sense of interpretation of the world which is around us. Now, there are two ways that I think of when I think of seeing through photography. First way is through the individual photograph. I think we've all heard the expression that a good picture is worth a thousand words. That's probably fairly accurate. I've also seen some words that are a heck of a lot better than a lot of pictures I've seen too. But you know, photography does have the ability to sum things up. It does not lie. It is not an interpretation. Okay, there is also the sense of a photograph as part of a larger story. Okay, and those are two things which I will talk about next. The sense of the individual photograph as a story, and the sense of pictures put together to form a larger story, like in the form of a slideshow. Are there any questions, any comments about what I've talked about so far? Is everybody still awake?
Good.
Okay. What? Yeah, I guess. Such is life. The world goes on. Okay, first of all, I'd like to talk about the single photograph as a work of art. There's certain decisions that you make when you look at a picture. You've got certain physical items to choose from. You have scenes, you have people, you have activities. All these things, you just sort of automatically choose between them when you go into the act of taking a picture, into the act of interpreting, recording what is around you. You also have a certain motion to account for. You know, there's a flow going on of which the picture is just a slice. You also have moods, which you must be sensitive to express. And this is really important. One general rule, anytime, if you've got the time, I mean there are times when you're moving and you're part of the flow, and to stop would be to end the flow. But the general rule, when I take a picture, I like to just maybe take a deep breath and look at it just quickly to see what it is that I am, you know, interested in. It might be a beautiful mountain peak, it might be a person. But I try to go beyond that. What is it in that person, in that moment, that I want to get a picture of? I study the details that are around that scene. And in a sense, I make choices. I select things that will be in the picture, things that will not be in the picture. Could I have the first picture? Right. Okay. First thing that you choose, you know, you have central elements and elements which, well, best support it. You have a large selection of large and small details from which to choose. Here you have, in this particular situation, oops, that didn't help. Basically, what you're looking at are two diverse situations. You've got, you know, an idyllic scene. All of my pictures, by the way, are pretty much outdoor pictures. And you've got one scene at the bottom, a picture of flowers. One scene at the top, picture of mountains, and it's sort of separated. One simple rule when you're looking looking at some central elements is to choose them and to put them in an interesting form. Now, if I'd have just taken a picture of the flowers, I would have had an ordinary picture. If I'd have just taken a picture of the horizon, I would have had an ordinary picture. But by keeping things off-center, on the rule of thirds means that you should, that the central element of any picture should be either at the one-third or two-thirds part of your of the frame, or at the one-third on one side, one-third on the other, but never in the center, because your eyes move through a picture. Here, okay, when I look at it, first I see the flowers, and then I'm sort of drawn up along the flowers, and then I see the horizon. And in a sense, the mountain slope that's in between there separates them and gives you a sense of two pictures, but your eye flows through that picture, giving it both a sense of discontinuity, but also a sense of continuity because you have foreground and you have background. Okay, you want to hit the next one? Okay, in another sense, you can also see the rule of thirds here. The center of the picture is the person. It's also a matter of timing here. You look, you know, the person is at a certain point. I designed this as a silhouette. Okay, this is the device which you can use. What I did is I took my light reading from the background there, from the horizon. And that way the horizon is going to look normal and the foreground is going to be darkened out as much as possible. But it's it gives a sense of... I like this picture. In fact, this I made stationery out of this. but it gives a sense of solitude, I guess, is the best word that I can think of. But it's where I have a central element. I decide to work with it in a certain way, which in this way, since I had great contrast, I decided to make the most of that contrast. So I had a decision to make, and I made it in a certain way with a certain result. Okay, do you want to hit the next one? Okay. Well, it's higher than halfway up. Yeah, it's about the two. It'll be, okay. Now, this is one where you also have a format which to choose. Okay, you have like a vertical format like this, and you have a horizontal format. Most people just take pictures in a horizontal format. In terms of the way that you look at a picture, a vertical format draws your eyes from the bottom to the top. In a sense, you're involved in the picture. It's like walking into it. I accentuated that by having a person sit on the ledge there and look down over the land so that you actually see it through a sense of, in a sense, through his eyes. Looking down through the picture and down into the environment. It's really important that you include people in pictures because, number one, they get perspective. I mean, you say a person is so tall and the scene is so big in comparison to it, but it also gives personality. Okay, if I just had a picture of this glacier, it could be from any climb. By having this, this picture reminds me of a particular climb, a particular group, a particular personality, a particular atmosphere. Okay, do you want to show the next one, Tosh? Okay, now here I have a horizontal perspective. Your eye in a horizontal perspective is drawn across the picture. From one side to the other, you are in effect a spectator. It's like watching a horse race go right in front of you. Your eye is just drawn across it. And then only after you've gone across it do you start to look back into it. In this case, I use that effectively by having you look in effect through the eyes of the people who are there. So then, actually, in a sense, I've done the same thing with both pictures. But the main thing is in the vertical, you have picture that it's a picture that you almost walk into. If the horizontal, it's one which you sort of sit back and look at. And I think that's an important distinction to make in your own photography. Okay, now this is, here I'm using the picture of the person for perspective. And okay, and what I've done here, most of the time pictures are taken pretty much from a standing, stepping on the wire, from a standing position. You know, you just take your picture like this, and it's a horizontal. In this case, what I did, I wanted a picture of a sense of how large this area was. So what I did is I got down real low, very close to the flowers. I got a maximum area of focus. And I took a picture across so that you have both a sense of where we are, then the person in there, and then a sense of what that person is enjoying. No, I did not. I used what's called range focus. Where I took, I got it so that my most distant focus would be on infinity for my depth of field. That depth of field is something that's sort of technical. You might understand it or not understand it, but the larger the f-stop number you use, you got these numbers like f4, f5, 6, 8, 11, 16. The larger number there that you can use, the deeper the area of focus is going to be with your picture. Okay, on this picture, what I did was I used what's called range focus. I set it, I had it, let's say, at f11. And at f11, I could take this picture with my depth of field being from like about 7 feet to infinity. So everything closer than 7 feet is slightly out of focus, and after that, everything to infinity is in focus. In other words, I focused on a point closer than that person in the picture, but you really can't quite see it. But I had a real small opening on the camera, which is a larger number. Okay, you want to get the next one, Tosh? Okay. Okay, another way of looking at perspective is in terms of your position. You've got, you can shoot from above something. When you shoot on above something, looking down, you have a sense of making things into smaller groups. You're really a spectator when you're looking down on a scene. People are just sort of like islands rather than part of a group. Or else you can look up. Notice how pictures of political candidates are always taken from perspectives below them, and you're looking up to the person. Yeah, that's sort of the same type of thing here. This was on a particular climb, and these pictures are all from Glacier National Park, by the way, where I spent a good part of my summers. It expressed some of the beauty of the day, and also just some of the exhilaration. Yes. What I did is I used the polarizing filter. Are you familiar with you know what polarizing sunglasses are? Okay, same thing. And when you use a polarizing filter and aim it straight into the sun, it really darkens things up. It almost gives you a sense of night. And that's what I did. I had a polarizing filter on. I put it so that it was fully on. You know, I adjusted it on my camera. And then aimed it at this person and took a picture to get that effect. Okay, Tosh, do you want to hit the next one? Okay, another way is a sense of framing, of selecting what it is you want to shoot and how you want to shoot it. Now, this is a simple silhouette, but it's a picture of a person that I know, and at a place, it was the day that we were climbing, and we were all fairly quiet. And it was just the type of day where we were all in our own thoughts. And this picture really expressed what was happening on that day. And in a sense, by taking the picture in this way, I think I've effectively capture the reflective nature of what was going on. Okay. Want to hear the next one? Okay, another way of framing something is by using differing light sources. Okay, this is a really beautiful meadow with flowers. It's really intense. And the way that I chose to capture it, I tried like 3 or 4 different ways. Basically, I have a dark background, and the sun was coming right down on the flowers. What I did is I took my light reading off of the flowers, and I left the wall in the background just dark enough so that I put my focus on the flowers to give a sense of the brilliance. That particular meadow in that day. Okay. No. I chose not to use any filters for this picture. Oh, she asked if I used any filters. And I said, no, I did not. Okay? Okay, and then there is a sense of being at the right moment. Okay, this person went out on that log, which was also very dangerous, by the way. Something which I would not suggest anybody do. It was early in the year, so there's a lot of flow. If you'd have fallen off of that, he'd have gotten hurt. But there's a sense of him out there, and then somebody ran over with their camera to take a picture, and I was right there, so I took a picture of the person taking a picture of the person doing the stupid thing on the log. And that's an important part of photography, to just sort of try to plan, try to be flexible, whether you have an Instamatic or a standard lens reflex in our regular 35mm camera, to just grab things. They might not even be in focus, but it's better to take a bad picture of something that's really good than to not take the picture because you tried to take too long or you spent too much time working on it. Okay. Okay. No. Yes. Now this is another one of those scenes that, in other words, you just have to sort of flow and look around you and be close enough so that, and occupied enough in what's going on around you so that you can pick up little dramas which take place, like a marmot trying to steal somebody's shoe. Okay, and this would be an example then of just finding the right moment and grabbing the picture. Okay, Tosh? And then the last category I have is a story. Okay, now this is a friend of mine. We had climbed a mountain, climbed maybe 3,000 feet up to the top of this mountain. And what did we discover at the top? Ripple marks. That rock that he is holding there at one time was the bottom of a shallow sea. And here it's like 3,000 feet above. The terrain all around it now, just the changes that the world has gone through. Want to hit the next one? And this gives you an idea of where that rock was. That's the bottom of an ocean about 500 million years ago. Pardon? Okay. Okay, yes, we do need a fine-grained film, usually to pick up that type of texture. Well, no, you don't really. All the films on the market today are pretty pretty sharp. I choose Kodachrome for myself. It's a little better than Ektachrome. It's a little sharper. You could buy a film at Kmart, and it would pick that up. Colors wouldn't be as bright. It wouldn't last as long. It also just wouldn't be as sharp, but you would basically capture the scene. Although, remember, photography, by taking all the senses and breaking them down into a two-dimensional form, to capture a sense of life, you really have to accentuate what you do have there and make it larger than life. Colors have to be brighter than life. The detail has to be sharper than life. The details have to be organized in the best possible way to keep a sense of what it is that you tried to accomplish within that picture for it to work. So that, you know, any edge you can get is going to be helpful. Okay. That should be it. That's it, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. There's another sense of a story. You know, beyond some of this, okay, I've gone through some rules. In a sense, if I had the proper pictures, I should show more people pictures with the particular topic that I've shown. That's being a long ways from home. That keeps me from doing that effectively. But there's another sense of a picture, and this is one where I have set up a multimedia program. The sense of a thematic story, where you take a general theme and you put together a number of images that deal with that thematic material, and you put them together in a collage, if you will, to create a story and to say something that you feel important to say. Okay, you've got, you could have a general photographic story, like it would be easy to set up a photography, photographic show of pictures taken here at Holden Village, to tell the story here at Holden Village. This has to do with the theme, but it would also have to do with a specific theme, a specific story. Okay, in putting together a slideshow on hold in which I'll be taking, I'm taking pictures and I'll be taking more pictures, the first thing that I would want to express would be the setting. Capture something of the mood and the idea of generally what is here. And another thing would be important is to catch the routine. What goes on, in what order, with what end in mind, in terms of schedule. Do you want the scheduling to be flexible, or is it very tight? What type of mood do they want to create? Okay, and then after that, okay, first two things are very general. From there, I guess I choose to go into my preferences, those things which I see as being the most important to me out of the sense of all of the types of things that I have to choose from. And then perhaps from there to go into a little more specific in the activities for the people. People that have things to say that are important to me. The people that I like, for no general reason. The people that I become friends with. Those types of things, get a little more specific. And then if you're really creative, you might be able to even capture a sense of the ideas that are being expressed. It's sort of hard when you have a lecture, take a picture, somebody giving a lecture, and to, remember what it is. But even that, if you had a picture of like a lecture, then you could say, well, this person talked about these types of ideas. Well, that might not be. And also you have special places. The place might be your room. It might be this auditorium at a specific time, like during the evening service. It might be, it could be lapidary, or it could be a spot on one of the trails. These things I think are important to capture. And I think I would sort of like to end off a story like that, getting more and more specific, just down to sort of like, one question I always like to do, say when I set up a slideshow, is if I were to show one last slide, what would what should that final impression of the experience be? In other words, you pick a certain image or two or three images which express, best, which summarize. So you start with general, go to the specific, and from the specific, try to go from a lot of specifics down to a few things which are a little more important. In other words, sort of a pyramid. Funnel down the material. That would be a specific story which you could tell in a situation like this. The The multimedia show I have here is the other type, the general story, where I've taken several clients and I put them together in a collage. Okay, I guess I'd like to show that now before we completely run out of time. Okay, first of all, just as a general introduction, this is a story about climbing. Not climbing any particular mountain, or about climbing any mountain at all, but more or less about the process of climbing. For me, it has to do with mountains. For other people, it has other meanings. For each one of us, it has its own meaning. Basically, whatever it is we climb, whether it's a mountain, or a profession, or an idea, or a belief, we always start out, first of all, with a general curiosity, with a, you know, sort of a longing, the view of a horizon, whether it's an intellectual horizon or whether it is a horizon of mountains along the sunset. And just slowly we venture out onto trails, and finally off the trails, and maybe tinkering around the bottom of the rocks. But there's always that point at which we decide that you are either going to do it or you're not going to do it. And you decide to make that climb.
Thank you.
every climb, whatever it may be, as it begins, so does it end. But as it ends, another dream, another climb, another idea, another adventure takes its place, and you start out all over again. Okay, that was orchestrated version of Close Encounters of the Third Kind by John Williams. Rather popular piece. Yeah. And this just gives you an idea. You can do anything from pictures to with just more or less dialogue along with them to something sort of multimedia like this with music to pictures and with some introduction, some ending, but basically just letting people go through their own process following along your path. Okay, dissolving from one to the other, I really wouldn't... yeah, there would be. I've chosen not to go that route. I don't like dissolved pictures. I like the sharp, almost percussive change from one picture to the next. It's almost... it's like a... I try to do it more or less to the rhythm of the music, so that change gives you a sense of rhythm. I like to think of science as sort of being an extension of the, you know, as I say, of the percussion section in the music. It's part of the rhythm. And I like that sharpness as a result. And this is something you could do very easily at home. It's just a cassette recorder, one reel of slides. You could do this to a family situation. You could do it to to something like a trip you've taken, whatever. Yes. Right. You can see the thing is there's no real reason why you have to be necessarily chronological. That's an easy way to put pictures into order. But you might have another idea that would that would also have a thematic meaning, a movement from one point to another point. It doesn't necessarily have to be time. Yes. That would be one way of doing it. Another one would be to number them. A certain trip, a certain number, a certain time. You've always got a date and a year on your slides, which gives you some help right there. And so you could take them, out of order and put them into your own order. Or, and just using chronological order as one possibility. You might decide you want to do, let's say you've come to Holden here for the last 20 years. You might want to do a show where you start from this year and go back, rather than starting from the beginning and coming up to now. And just put together some of the themes which keep on reoccurring in your pictures over the years, of going back and seeing some of the hints, some of the ideas that you yourself have given and set on the film. Over the years. It's dinner time. Yes? Pardon, I couldn't hear that. Okay, mainly because that is the medium from which you can be published. And it's also less expensive if you're footing the bill yourself. There's no reason why you couldn't do the same type of thing with a photo album if you're shooting prints. You can, but they usually don't come out of the very best quality. That are of better quality. So there's a lot of ways, and especially, am I assuming that everybody here is not going to go to the 5 o'clock setting of dinner? Because if you are, you should leave right now. Okay, I'm sorry, I've gone over a little bit. But, well, I think that's probably enough since the person that asked the question left. But thank you very much for coming.